Tales of the Left Hand, Book 3, written and read by John Maher. The story so far. Tesca and Giacomo, having been plucked from the sea by the crew of the Osprey, find themselves prisoners of Ambrose Fane. Chapter 8. Tesca had been aware of the young woman since she and her bodyguard had walked into the Gull, a sailor's tavern in Narlos. She was tall and slender, with long brown hair, wearing leggings and a sword instead of a dress. Growing up in the Empire, this did not surprise him as much as it might otherwise, and since coming to the Frieze, he'd encountered ladies who insisted on being treated as men by dressing like them, even to the point of wearing weapons. But her outfit seemed too clean, too well-maintained for Tesca to take her seriously. Dilettante, he decided, playing at the rough life for a lark. Her bodyguard reinforced his analysis. Tesca felt that if a woman was capable enough to travel through the rougher portions of society, then she didn't need a bodyguard. The man was large, but that didn't bother Tesca. Their size usually made them slow. On one occasion, Tesca had killed a large man who hadn't even finished drawing his blade. Most of his attention was on sharpening his sword, the rasp of stone against steel regular as the ticking of a clock, letting his peripheral vision track them as they approached the bar. The woman leaned in to ask a question of Jerem, the owner and barkeep, then she and her companion turned in Tesca's direction.
10 gold, Tesca called out.
The woman cocked her head to one side.
Excuse me?
My starting rate is 10 gold, he replied, running his thumb carefully along the blade's edge.
Satisfied, he set the argument on the table before him, drew the retort, and began to sharpen that. The woman strode across the room to stand in front of his table.
"And what does 10 gold get me?" she asked.
"Kohayan," Tesca decided, listening to her accent. There was a quality to it that reminded him of the way his father had spoken. "Drown her. I've got a fair amount of coin for the next week or two. I don't need a new job right now."
10 gets me to listen to your offer, that's all."
The woman sat in the chair opposite from him before he could respond and tossed a small pouch onto the table, which landed with a clink of coin.
"There's 5. I don't spend 10 on a mere consultation, no matter how good their reputation might be."
She met Tesca's annoyed expression with a sly smile.
"Now, if you put away your little toys and give me your undivided attention for the rest of this conversation, I'll put down 5 more.
"Who do you think you are?" Tesca snapped.
"You stride in here as if you own the place."
"I do own it," she interrupted, her smile widening.
Tesca snorted in disbelief.
"No, you don't. Jerem does," he said, pointing over her shoulder towards the bar. "He's a friend of mine, and—"
"And he lets you stay here at this table as if it was your private office," the woman went on, rolling over his words again. "This arrangement started not long after Jerem's daughter was assaulted by some of Tanner Jack's crew, didn't it? Well, that was the word on the street anyway, but somehow there was never enough evidence to arrest them. Tanner's on such good terms with the Lord Mayor and all. His lordship wouldn't want his friend's crew harassed unless there was proof they'd done the deed."
Her green eyes glittered with amusement as she leaned forward, crossing her arms and setting her elbows on the table.
"Then one by one, those 3 who never got arrested turned up dead. The last of them was under guard by Tanner's own crew. One night, he just disappeared out of the 3rd-story room they'd stashed him in, and the next morning, they found him floating in the harbor, a second smile gaping under the one he was born with."
Her smile widened.
"Odd timing, that, how you started staying here just around then."
"Not for free," Tesca pointed out.
"No, not quite for free," she agreed. "You rent Jerem's spare room upstairs, but he doesn't charge you 1/10 of what he charged his last tenant, and you don't seem to spend a single coin on food and drink."
"You've had people watching me?" Tesca demanded.
"No, I've had people watching Jerem. You're just in here all the time. He owed me money and was having trouble paying me back, so I started looking into where the money was going. You're only part of his expenses, but you're certainly not helping him turn a profit. Last night, Jerem and I settled his debt. We're partners now. He handles the day-to-day operations, but I own 51%. I suppose that makes me your new landlord, doesn't it?"
She watched him for a few seconds.
"Do I have your undivided attention now?"
Tesca shook his head. "You went to all this trouble just to talk to me."
"Oh, it was no trouble at all. And we both know you wouldn't have listened to me otherwise."
"Got this all planned out, do you? You think you're 1 step ahead of me?"
She laughed.
My father's always told me it's easier to win the game if you own the board it's played on.
A shrewd man, Teska said. So now, if I don't dance to your tune, you'll be sharing your recent observations with Tanner Jack?
Certainly not, she replied. The man's a pig, and his men are worse. It does him good to have some wind taken out of his sails. Besides, I suspect that if Tanner learned what really happened to his men, I'd be shortening his life, not yours.
Her green eyes sparkled with amusement.
As I said, you've a bit of a reputation, though I'd have to see you for myself to believe everything I've heard.
Her wide smile contracted as she settled into a more serious mood.
I've already paid you 5 gold and offered you 5 more to stay here in my bar and listen to what I have to say. That's the deal.
She jerked a thumb over her shoulder.
If you're not interested, there's the door.
Teska smiled, sheathing both of his blades and leaning over the table in imitation of the woman's posture. So, to whom do I have the pleasure of speaking?
Alessandra Fane.
Teska Sicarius.
I know.
Wake up! Came a voice from across the room. Teska gasped and spluttered as water suddenly splashed into his face. It was seawater, the salt stinging his cuts. He felt the wooden seat of the chair under him, felt the ropes binding his arms, and he remembered where he was, holding on to the fading image of Allie's smiling face for as long as he could.
I thought you'd stay awake for a lot longer than this, Ambrose Fane laughed, dropping a ladle back into a bucket near his feet. Well, passing out won't help you. Each time you do, I'll just wake you up again and pick up where we left off. I don't mind you making this harder, though. I've nothing better to do.
Teska said nothing, trying to gauge how long he'd been unconscious. He glanced through one swollen eye at the room and judged that he hadn't been out very long this time. The light coming through the large windows at the rear of the cabin was at more or less the same angle it had been before. Ambrose had appropriated the captain's cabin for his own, something Teska knew he did every time he was aboard the Osprey. Idly, he wondered where the captain was forced to sleep during those occasions. He looked up at a grouping of 4 small silhouettes and matching oval frames hanging on one wall, depicting a woman and 3 children that he guessed were Kern's family. Ambrose had thrown a large square of sail canvas down on the floor as a drop cloth, setting Teska's chair in the middle of it. He stepped away from Teska and reached for a large tankard sitting on the table that had been pushed back against the wall. Teska smelled ale as Ambrose cupped the vessel in his gloved hands and guzzled the contents. Ambrose was sweating heavily through his shirt. He was leaner than his father Draxon, but still a bulky man.
Ah, Ambrose said, setting the tankard down. This is thirsty work, but of course you know that.
He grinned.
A whole day without water now, Sicarius? And we've a full cup right here, he said, pointing to a second tankard a few feet away. Say the word and it's yours.
Teska made no reply. Ambrose sighed as if he hadn't expected any different.
Then we're back where we started. He approached Teska. Here's what we both know. You left Kohane overland, where you crossed paths with Garrick here.
He pointed over to Cabot, who was sitting a short distance away, his gaze boring into Teska. The smuggler had not said a word since the questioning had begun.
You don't know how much of a favor I'm doing you by not leaving you alone with him. I'm actually protecting you, Sicarius. I really am.
Teska gave no response, instead staring at the 4 portraits, imagining the names of Kern's family and what their voices sounded like. Ambrose went on.
So, after parting ways with Garrick, you lot continued on to the coast and were picked up by the Cutlass. That's a fact as well. Our man sent a bird to us the very day you got on board.
He leaned in close to Teska's face. Now Teska could smell the fresh ale on his breath and the stink of old ale in his sweat.
That's right, Sicarius. We've got a man on board the Cutlass. Didn't know that, did you?
Hadn't been sure, Teska rasped. But thanks for confirming it. Ambrose glared, slapping Teska across the face.
But you don't know who it is, he sneered.
Teska smiled through bleeding lips, meeting Ambrose's eyes. Actually, I do. But I'm sure you'll confirm that too, eventually. Just keep talking. That earned him another slap. In the corner, Garrick stirred. He chuckled as if someone had made a joke, his face suddenly animate and cheerful.
Good one, Will. What's that?
Ambrose snarled, turning away from Teska. Garrick looked at Ambrose, tossing his thumb to an empty chair on his right.
Oh, Will was just wondering who's really in charge. The left hand's tied to the chair, but you're the one telling secrets.
As Ambrose spluttered and fumed at that, Garrick turned his attention back to Tesca, the sly smile dropping away. The speed at which the man's expressions came and went without any transition reminded Tesca of a signal lamp at night, the shutter flipping open and closed.
Will thinks we should take one of his hands if he don't tell us where the elf is.
We know where the elf is, Ambrose snapped at him. The little witch has taken Grievous to the Abbey of St. Ravino. It's the only place on Maipur he can get his damn map identified. What I want to know is how in the hell Sid Dwyer ended up on the Cutlass, and who in the hell's this Jordan is?
Then take one of his hands if he don't tell us that, Garrick replied.
A smile twitched across his face, and he laughed.
A left hand missing a left hand. That's a good one, Will.
Ambrose looked disgusted.
I told you to stop talking like that, Cabot. Your brother's dead.
The humorous expression on Garrick's face was gone as fast as it had appeared.
Not denying that, but that's no reason why he can't offer his opinion.
Ambrose rolled his eyes.
Why, father saddled me with you? All right, just keep your brother's opinions to yourself.
He looked at Tesca, thinking.
But you've a point, Cabot. It'd be hard for him to swing two blades with only one hand.
Tesca had been wondering when this questioning was going to move into more dangerous waters. Ambrose hadn't been pulling his punches, but so far, punching Tesca was all he'd done. Despite brandishing a short lash and several other toys, Ambrose hadn't used any of them yet, even though they'd been at this on and off for over a day. He's not just taking his time, Tesca decided. He's holding back. Why? Then, as Ambrose plucked at his sweat-soaked shirt and pulled it off with a grumble, Tesca saw something that might answer the question. He smiled through his split lips. Ambrose noticed the reaction as he wiped a towel across his chest.
What in the abyss do you think is so funny, Sicarius?
Allie's little present, Tesca said, nodding towards a thin white scar just below Ambrose's ribcage.
You shouldn't let her get inside your guard like that.
What are you talking about?
Ambrose snapped. But he also shifted his posture, turning his left side away from Tesca to conceal the scar.
You and Allie had a row after the fete, Tesca went on, about Grievous, most likely. But before it was over, she drew steel and cut you.
Tesca smiled.
That's bollocks, Ambrose snarled. I got this during a practice bout with my father's swordmaster. You should see the one I gave him.
Liar, Tesca replied. The entire city knows where you got that scar.
Shut up, Ambrose yelled. You don't know anything.
But Tesca could see the worry behind Ambrose's anger. He'd really thought no one knew what Allie had done to him. And Tesca had put two concerns into his mind, that all of Kohane was secretly laughing at him behind his back, and that if the Duke's agents knew this particular secret, they might know others as well.
That's why Allie's not in Kohane, isn't it? Tesca pressed. Your father didn't want this escalating. He didn't want her doing something else to you.
Something else to me? Ambrose growled. He didn't want me breaking his little princess's arm as payback for the knife.
So she did cut you then?
Tesca laughed. He couldn't help it. He was laughing as Ambrose rushed forward, driving his fist into Tesca's face, and as the stars faded from his vision, he was still chuckling.
Brave talk from a man tied to a chair, Sicarius, Ambrose snapped. You're out here in the middle of the ocean, all alone. Anything happens to you, no one's going to know about it.
He tossed the towel on the floor and took a fresh linen shirt from his luggage.
Allie, Tesca panted, spitting out a mouthful of blood which spattered on the drop cloth. Allie will know.
Ambrose tugged the shirt over his head.
How's she going to do that? Not as if she's here, is she?
Tesca looked up at Ambrose.
You think every man on this ship is loyal to you?
You and Allie spy on each other more than your father spies on the Duke.
Hells, she stabbed you in her private apartment, on your family's estate, and you couldn't keep even that secret from getting out.
Ambrose glared down at him, but Tesca could see he'd hit the mark. He wasn't telling Ambrose anything the man didn't already know. Tesca just hoped the reminder would continue to stall him.
Ambrose, what happens here will have consequences.
Ambrose stirred after a moment, sneering at Tesca.
Nice try, Sicarius. Triad knows what Allie ever saw in you, but that's long past now. You're the one that left her. You're the one that lured Grievous away on her watch. She doesn't want to save you. She wants to kill you.
And how happy will she be if you do that for her?
Tesca asked, not surprised at Ambrose's words.
If you take that revenge away from her,
What will she do?
That gave Ambrose pause. He scowled, thinking.
An interesting idea, Sicarius. Is keeping you alive for Allie worth more than feeding you to the sharks? He shrugged. Well, we've time to decide.
There was a sound as Garrick got to his feet.
You said I could have him.
Ambrose rolled his eyes.
Oh, son's wrath, Cubbett. Be patient.
You're going to give him to that sister of yours, the smuggler muttered, glaring at Tesca. But you said I could have him when you was finished.
Does it look like I'm finished?
The smuggler shrugged, the barest twitch of his shoulders.
Will could get a man to talk in 2 hours. You've had over 12. You won't use the lash or the screws on him. You won't take his hand. Sounds like you're finished.
Ambrose ground his teeth, but a moment later he suddenly smiled.
It's the elf you really want, isn't it? It's the elf that killed your brother, not him.
There was a flicker of emotion across Garrick's slack features.
Aye, that's right. Burned him alive, she did.
So, you don't need Sicarius, do you? You let me do what I like with him, and the elf is yours.
Garrick seemed to take a very long time to consider this proposal.
The elf's going to the Abbey, like you said?
Yes, Cabot,
Ambrose replied, as if he was explaining something to a stubborn child.
Like as not, we'll find them on the road out of Maipur. If we don't find her there, then she'll be up at the Abbey.
And I'll get to kill her. You swear it?
I swear it.
Garrick finally nodded.
Deal. But if the elf ain't there, then I'll get to kill him instead, and to the hells with that sister of yours.
Fine, fine, Ambrose said, waving him off. I still like your idea of taking a hand, though. Do me a favor and bring that islander up from below.
As Tesca snapped his head up, Garrick smiled quickly, a flash of emotion in his dull face, then headed for the door.
Oh, we're not done here, Sicarius,
Ambrose said as he sat in a chair next to the table and picked up his tankard again.
You've talked yourself into becoming a present for Allie, for all the good that will do you, but I'll have the answers I want.
As Ambrose drained his tankard, Tesca grappled with his growing sense of dread. He should have seen this coming, but the beating he'd received had taken its toll. He hadn't considered what other options Ambrose might use to persuade him.
Just the two of us in here right now, Tesca thought. Only one door. If I could get out of this chair, I could subdue Ambrose, hold him hostage until we can get off the ship.
He flexed his arms, testing the bonds holding him to the chair, but he'd already done this a few times. The ropes were far too strong for him to break. The chair, on the other hand, was old and wobbly. Tesca thought that if he leaned in the right direction to topple it over, it might break. But Tesca knew that he wouldn't be able to get loose fast enough to overpower Ambrose. Then an idea struck him. Carol has gotten loose of ropes before, using magic. She's described the entropy spell to me. He closed his eyes, concentrating on the fibers digging into his wrists. Now what? Carol has said she has to gather the mana into a pattern. The pattern's what breaks those fibers apart. But I have to find the mana first. Come on. Come on, you did this once before. It was so easy that time. No effort at all. He gritted his teeth, then forced himself to relax. No, you can't force it. The mana is out there. You've seen it. You can do this. Just reach out. There was a knock on the door, and what feeble concentration Tesca had been able to collect broke.
Come,
Ambrose ordered. Captain Kern entered his own cabin. He was opening his mouth to speak, but froze at the sight of the two men standing on the blood-spattered dropcloth.
Well,
Ambrose demanded.
What is it? Is the harbor in sight?
Yes, Kern stammered, his disquiet rapidly sinking beneath a veneer of detached professionalism.
The harbor is ahead of us, but there is a complication.
Ambrose frowned.
That's a word I don't like, Kern. Maipur is flying the orange banner, sir. There are armorbacks nesting in the harbor.
Ambrose's expression did not change.
So?
Kern pressed on after only a moment's pause.
Sir, as we discussed earlier, you wish to keep the Osprey anchored in the bay rather than dock in Maipur itself? Aye, I'll have no inspectors coming on board. You raised my father's flag, didn't you?
Kern nodded.
Good. That'll get Oryk to pull up his pants and get out here double quick. He's got to keep the locals off our backs and off this ship. The Count's men would be bad enough, but I'll be damned if I'm letting the Kohayan commissioner on board either. The old spider's got his arm up Montrose's ass like a puppet.
Kern smiled blandly at the joke.
Be that as it may, sir, we cannot anchor in the harbor.
Ambrose snorted in derision.
Because of Armorbacks. Kern, you insisted we buy equipment to keep Armorbacks off the ship, and that stuff wasn't cheap. My father damn near had a seizure when he saw the bill. You got the toys you demanded, so put them to use.
Kern took a deep breath.
Sir, the equipment will discourage Armorbacks from coming aboard, but if the Osprey is the only ship in the bay, and they're hungry enough...
The door opened again, and Garrick entered with Giacomo in tow, the islander's hands and feet manacled. Ambrose glanced around, annoyed at how cramped the cabin had suddenly become.
Kern, the ship's not docking. That's flat. Set up your precious little toys to keep the monsters away.
He nodded, satisfied with his decision, then turned to Teska.
Now, back to business. Two questions, Sicarius. One, how in the hells did Sidois get washed into the sea along with you and this scrump here? And two, who's this Jordan mentioned in the letter the elf had?
He glanced at Giacomo and sneered.
Each of those questions is worth one of your friend's hands.
There was a gasp of surprise from Kern, who was trying to keep a look of revulsion off his face.
Sir, I really must...
Ambrose whirled on him.
You want to think very, very carefully about your next words, Kern.
Whatever objection Kern was in the middle of voicing died in his throat, and he set his mouth firmly shut. Teska looked from Ambrose to Giacomo, who was numb with shock. He sighed in resignation.
I'm sorry, Giacomo.
The islander gave a dull nod.
Giacomo, no be blaming you, Windmaster.
Windmaster? Ambrose asked. What's that about?
Nothing, Teska said, a touch too quickly.
Ambrose raised an eyebrow.
Maybe there's three questions I need answered, eh?
He shrugged.
I suppose I can take a foot as well.
Teska looked Ambrose in the eye. Let me make this perfectly clear. Torturing Giacomo won't do you any good. He doesn't know the answers to your questions, and no matter what you do to him, I'm not going to give you those answers either. Ambrose's face darkened.
You won't, eh?
I won't.
You don't care what happens to him, then? I could just open his throat right here, and you wouldn't even try to stop me?
He shook his head.
You're a cold fish, Sicarius.
Teska held Ambrose's gaze. Skip the dramatics, Ambrose. We both know you'd have dragged him in here for questioning one way or another because he was on the raft with me. You think that maybe I told him something while we were on that raft. That's how you see this. That's the sort of man you are. And we both know that even if I did answer your questions, you'll just take one of his hands anyway to spite me, because that's also the sort of man you are. Garrick laughed, an awkward sound somewhere between a grunt and a cough, and this seemed to infuriate Ambrose more than Teska's words had.
Well, Ambrose said after a few moments, if you say that's the sort of man I am, then I suppose it must be true, because you're always right about everything, aren't you?
He turned back toward the table and opened a leather bag sitting upon it, drawing out a hatchet.
I'd ask you which hand you'd like to see him lose first, but I think we'll just flip a coin.
There was a knock on the door.
Son's wrath, Ambrose snarled. What now?
The door opened and the cabin boy came in, freezing in place as he took in the crowded scene, his eyes coming to rest on the gleaming hatchet in Ambrose's hand.
Did I say you could come in?
Ambrose roared, half raising the hatchet. The blonde youth paled.
Sirs, he stammered, looking from Ambrose to Kern and back again. There's a launch set forth from the dock, heading our way, bearing the Fane colors.
Ambrose's anger quickly drained away.
That'll be Oryk. He grinned. A faster response than I expected. He's a gutless backstabber, but I'll give him credit. He knows which side of his bread gets buttered.
He looked around, suddenly impatient.
I've got to get ready for him. Kern, you set up those toys we bought for you. Garrick, you get these two back down to the cages. And you, he snapped at the cabin boy, you help him with that. If either of these two break free, I'll take one of your hands instead.
The youth cringed at the threat, but stepped gingerly onto the drop cloth and began to loosen Teska's bonds. Garrick drew a knife and stood ready, watching Teska closely. Kern remained where he was for a moment, glancing at the four silhouettes on the wall with a resigned expression before he left the cabin. Ambrose was already taking off the shirt he'd just put on and setting out a new one of far nicer quality. Giacomo was motionless, still absorbing the fact that somehow all of his limbs were still intact. The cabin boy untied Teska's legs from the chair, then started on Teska's arms.
"Free his right arm first," Garrick ordered. "He fights best with his left."
The youth paused a moment, then nodded and shifted to that side of the chair. Teska felt the young man's fingers tugging the ropes. Then he felt something else, a small piece of paper brushing against his palm. He did not grasp the paper, but twitched his fingers to let the youth know he'd felt it. An instant later, he felt the cabin boy's hand tug at the waistband of his breeches, tucking the paper against his skin. Then both hands were back working on the ropes. Teska was not as surprised by this as he might have been, but he was impressed at the boldness and skill of the move, passing him a message under Garrick's watching eye. It reawakened his suspicions about the cabin boy's true identity, but he didn't dwell on them. The youth had initiated contact. Like as not, Teska would have further opportunities to learn more. In short order, Teska's right arm was free, then his left. Teska saw Garrick tense, coiling like a spring. Teska didn't like the odds if he tried to make a move now, so he relented to the cabin boy, helping him up from the chair and fastening a pair of manacles around his wrists. He noted with satisfaction that the youth had not actually locked the manacles. He'd be able to get free of them without any trouble. Then Garrick directed the group out of the cabin and down into the hold. Sidois stirred as they approached, watching them from his cell with glittering eyes. After the cage was locked, Garrick pocketed the key, sheathed his knife, and tromped up the ladder. The cabin boy lingered a moment, catching Teska's eye before following the smuggler.
"Welcome back," Sidois said. "It appears you have had a most eventful time away."
Teska ignored him, twisting around to pluck the paper from under his waistband. The message was very simple. A chance to escape in exchange for what you know. This work is copywritten 2013 and has been written and recorded by John Maher. If you'd like to learn more about the Freeze, get yourself a bit of swag, or comment on this episode, please visit talesoftheleftand.com, where you can also find a link to our official Facebook page, and if you'd like, make a donation to help keep this series going. Thanks for listening.